Cunningham. Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by Ecolab, dedicated to improving cleaning and sanitation standards for leading hospitality, healthcare, and food processing customers worldwide. On the web at ecolab.com.
6 minutes past 11 o'clock. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Glad you could join us. Governor Jesse Ventura, as we said earlier, is our guest this hour. And as usual, there is lots of grist for the mill. The Minnesota legislature is back from its five-day break, gearing up for what should be a very lively last month of the Minnesota legislative session. And, of course, there's the fallout from the floodwaters that have threatened so much of Minnesota. Rivers are receding in the west, but they're rising. Even as we speak, an effort is underway at the Capitol to provide emergency state flood relief for local communities battling the floods. Those issues and more are on the docket for the program today. And as always, if you have a question for the governor, give us a call here, 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. If you're calling from outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. And an extra bonus today, if you log on to our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, we are webcasting today's program. So not only can you hear the governor, but you can see the governor. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
I'm just fine. DFL House members say that the state should provide some emergency relief to help Minnesota cities pay for their flood-fighting efforts. They're having a press conference on that matter right now. Would you support such legislation?
Well, first of all, we have to find out what the damages are at that point in time. Then, you know, and FEMA will come in from the federal government. And we're well on top of it. You know, in fact, the FEMA representative, the head of FEMA, was going to be in East Grand Forks Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we'll wait and I'll let Kevin Luer, who's in charge of that with my department, handle it. He does his job exceptionally well, and I leave it up to his expertise. He knows how to do it.
But you're open to the idea
of
maybe using some state money for that.
Certainly. Sure. Certainly.
What about permanent flood protection? I know when you were on your tour last week, you were saying that really this might be the way to go.
I think it is the way to go because obviously, you know, we heard in 1997 that this was the 100-year flood. Well, lo and behold, 4 years later, we're having the second 100-year flood. So I think they're going to occur more often. It's a situation, especially up in the Red River Valley area, where people have to remember that hundreds of years ago that was a lake. And that I've been told by our scientists in DNR and that at some day it will become a lake again. That it's just a matter of when, whether it's 5 years from now, 100 years from now, or 500 years from now. And so the problem, and that's why it's so fertile, that's why it's one of the greatest areas in the world to grow crops is because of that fact. And we want to take advantage of that, but at some point you have to take a hard look at the changing of the world and what those results could end up being. And so I'm not trying to scare anyone, but we also have to look at what's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to have permanent, like East Grand Forks, when I was up there, they've done a very good job. I don't think they're going to feel a whole lot from this whole thing because they've built permanent structures, permanent dikes are there to hold back the water. They also use this technique that a fella from here was over in Germany and apparently on the Rhine River or one of the rivers over there and saw a technique that the Europeans do there that they call invisible protection, where you can actually... It's very interesting to see the lower structure remains permanently, and then as the water rises up, they put these beams in, and they can line the beams then with boards, and then when it's over, you can then take them down, so mm-hmm. they come and go. And we've got to look at more innovative things like that can be assembled quickly, get the job done, but are there in a semi-permanent fashion rather than every time the floods come, out come the National Guard, out comes all the citizens, the high schoolers and the college kids and all that, and have to fill those bags and go through all that. I would like to take a moment, though, Gary, and really, really compliment all the people involved that have really come out to work for no money, volunteers, and especially if I can put a little highlight on the high school kids and the college kids. I was up there, and they're tremendous. I mean, they work hard. They don't ask for a thing. You buy them you give them a Mountain Dew and a sandwich, and they're good for the next 8 hours. And they were just remarkable. I was in Breckenridge, and I was sitting eating dinner with the volunteers up there, and also the Salvation Army and our National Guard deserve to be commended tremendously. They respond, and we were there, and the Salvation Army was providing the food. But I was at a table with some 10th graders who had literally been working for one whole week, 12 to 14 hours a day. And I mean, they still had a twinkle in their eye. You could tell they were a little tired, but they were by no means giving up in any way, shape, or form. And it was just fun to be up there and watch the spirit of these young people and their ability to come out. So, you know, with all the bad publicity, we so much the media focuses on the bad kids in the world. They get the publicity, but there are just thousands and thousands and thousands of tremendously good kids out there.
Mm-hmm. In terms of the permanent flood control measures, and my understanding is that President Bush has recommended a reduction in federal money for that. Again, is this the kind of thing, given the long-term costs that the state incurs on these floods, is that the kind of thing that the state ought to take a look at, maybe pick up some of the costs that the federal government traditionally has paid for?
Well, you know, it falls under the Corps of Army Engineers, and it falls under, I think, I will disagree with President Bush on this part of his budget. I think providing for public safety is the purpose of government. I think government gets off on a lot of other things that they have no business in. But I think public safety is something that government, that is a basic core element that both federal, state, and local governments should participate in. So I will disagree with him on that portion of his budget and say that, yes, he should provide for this type of Corps of Army Engineer work and the building of the dikes and the water prevention, because that's public safety.
Mm-hmm. What about legislature, the state capitol? Last month now, legislature's back in session, and it looks, on paper at least, like there are some pretty big differences between what the House Republicans are trying to accomplish, what the Senate Democrats are trying to accomplish, and what you're trying to accomplish. I assume there will be the traditional back and forth. Are you thinking about sitting down with the House Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader earlier, fairly soon, and try to get some kind of an agreement worked out so you can avoid that last-minute thrashing around that always occurs?
Oh, that's got to happen in the bicameral system. That's the enjoyment of the bicameral system, Gary. You know, I tried to bring forth a year ago to get unicameral on the ballot, and you saw that they were having none of it. Well, now they get the results of how the bicameral system works in their conference committees. And here's the part that troubles me. You got a lot of bills out there that people want to vote on. They want to see their legislators take a position on it. Let me run down a few. Stadiums. No vote's going to be taken. Why? Because of the bicameral system. Because you have one head of a conference committee who can shelf a bill and have that kind of power to where it's never voted on. Campaign finance reform. Again, it won't see the light of a vote. There's no accountability. Everybody will walk away with plausible denial. That's the greatness of that bicameral system. What's the other one out there? Shoot. Conceal and carry. Public safety bill. Again, it'll be shelved by a committee head, and no one will ever have to take a vote on it, and no one will be held accountable. I tried to tell people unicameral's a better way to go, because unicameral brings accountability, and each one of these bills that I mentioned in a unicameral system would be voted on, because whoever carried that bill could make it their priority bill, which would then require it to be voted on by the full House. But in the bicameral system, that doesn't happen. You get plausible denial. And that's what the big thing I'm trying to do in office is change the system in which government operates. Because if you're going to change government, you have to change the mechanism of how it operates to really change it. But yet, people sit on their hands out there, and now they're going to see the results of what their bicameral system, of how the government works and how nothing gets voted upon. And you don't really know where your legislators stand, because everything can get killed in committee. Now, getting back to what you talked about. It'll come down to the end like always. That's the way the bicameral system works. everyone, both sides will have to posture. I'm not going to bring them together yet, Gary, because they're not even in conference committee yet. They haven't even fully, decided what exactly they are going to do. They've got to go to conference committee, and at about the time they get into conference committee, I'll let them see in a week or two if they've gotten anywhere with it, and at that point, then I'll weigh in.
Mm-hmm. But not before.
Well, I'm available. My door's always open. If they want to request a meeting with me, I certainly will meet with them. But I've had my budget out there on time. I've done all my work according. And speaking of time, let me bring something up to you right now. A year ago, they passed Minnesota Statute 16A.1522, which is the rebate. Well, let me read you a few things. The House and the Senate passed this law in 1999. Earlier this year, as the law required, I presented a rebate plan to the entire legislature. The House complied with the law earlier this year and enacted a rebate plan. So the House did their job. April 15th has come and gone, and the Senate has not acted. They've ignored their own law on the rebate. They were supposed to have a rebate law by April 15th. That's what the statute said. Now, what kind of example, Gary, does this set for people? You know, we as citizens, when they pass laws, we're expected to follow them. We're expected to do what the law says. And, so that brings up the questions, well, gee, do we have the opportunity to choose which laws we can follow? And, are people allowed to choose what laws they can and cannot follow? And this is very serious to me because, quite frankly, it's a double standard. You know, if a citizen didn't meet a statutory requirement to file a report or pay a fee to the government, do you think the government would jump all over them? Well, here it's in reverse. The government passed a law to pay a fee to the citizens, and now the Senate has totally ignored it. Mm-hmm. And the date has passed. I mean, it's no different. What day was yesterday?
Senate wants to split up the use of the rebate. Are
but
you
they
open
didn't
to that?
Do it. They didn't. Now they can't. The date has passed. Well, it's a done, Gary. It's a done issue. Oh, you're laughing. In other words, this law is meaningless.
So what are you suggesting?
What I'm suggesting is that it's over. I'm not going to deal with it. I submitted what I'm going to do with the rebate, and that's and according to law and according to April 15th, they had till April 15th to do it, and they did not do it.
So as far as you're concerned,
the rebate's off the table, and it all goes back to the citizens, which is what I wanted in the first place. And how can they argue it? They didn't abide by their own law. It's after, look, Gary, well, how would we be if do they give us that? What's April 15th? What infamous day is that? That's the day you pay your taxes to the government, right? Now, here you've got money the government owes back to the people, and you've got a body of government ignoring it. Now, how would the government feel, and what do they do to you if you ignore your tax day? When it's your time to ante up with the government and pay the government's bill, what happens if you ignore that?
Is this drawing a line in the sand here, Governor? Sounds
no,
like you're going to have
No, Gary,
a...
I'm asking you a question.
Well, I just
what happens? What happens if you ignore April 15th, the day your taxes are due? What does government do to you if you ignore that?
Well, I could file an extension, I suppose.
But what do they do to you if you don't? They fine you. They penalize you. They, in fact, can almost jail you over it. They can come and take your property. What I'm saying is this is a horrible example of government not even following their own rules, where I did, the House did, but the Senate chose not to.
So sounds like the makings of a good constitutional battle.
It sounds to me like simply a case that I'm over done dealing with it. As far as I'm concerned, the people get all their money back and it's off the board because they didn't submit what they were supposed to do under Minnesota Statute 16A.1522, which is what they put into law.
Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour. If you've got a question for the governor, give us a call, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Just a reminder, if you check out our website, minnesotapublicradio.org, we are webcasting this program, so you can see the governor as well as hear from him. Cheryl, your question for the governor.
Yes, thank you, Gary. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Cheryl.
Governor, I want to applaud you for the way that you govern. You shoot from your hip, and I appreciate you not being a typical politician.
Well, thank you. I know no other way, so it's not like anything that I preconceive or, you know, plan to do. That's just who I am, and I can only be who I am.
Well, it's refreshing. This is my statement, and then I have sort of a comment,
sure.
A problem. I really appreciate your stand on the stadium issue, basically saying how is this a function of government and who gets the privilege of not paying any interest on the people's money. But this is my comment today. My concern is real estate taxes for homeowners. I live in Stillwater, mm-hmm. Grant actually, and this year my property taxes went up $600.
Yep.
And I just feel that with the increase in the market values, that is going to force a lot of homeowners out of their homes. And I think something really has to be done with it, and I commend you for starting the ball rolling. My concern is that even if your plan went through, and it doesn't look like it's going to, it would not stop that increase in the market value, which is really rolling up our real estate taxes. So
okay.
I'm wondering what you can do about it.
Well, it's very difficult. Again, getting change is always tough. Change is always scary for people, and especially legislators and people who make laws. Change is very scary to them. I agree with you wholeheartedly. In fact, my plan will give double-digit property tax relief across the board to every classification of property that we have. Now, what can we do about it? Well, I'm a great believer, and I've talked about this openly. Can it happen? I don't know. But I think I would love to get rid of assessors. I think that is the most ridiculous form of taxation that's ever been dreamed of, where they can tax you over the potential value of something. Because until you sell your home, you don't know what the value is. And one of the things I'd love to see is to see us lock in on a property value that whatever you purchase your home for, that it stays that way until you sell it. That's the value. And why should it be based upon whether your neighbor down the street sells their home for umpty-ump amount more? Then yours goes up on the assumption that if you sold your property, this is what you'd get. But again, we have to look at the big picture, because if you do things like that, then you have to make up for it somewhere. And that, again, comes back to my belief in sales taxes. I love the, if you can say you love a tax, and none of us really do, but to me, the sales tax is the most fair tax because you choose to pay it by how you live and what you buy. Your property tax, and remember this, remember how government treats you on your property. If you are a good citizen and you improve your property and make it as best you can, well, the government rewards you by charging you more then. It costs you more money. But if you're a bad citizen and you let your property deteriorate and you've got the worst house on the block, what does government do? Government rewards you for that. So what we've got to get out of in government is rewarding bad behavior and penalizing good behavior. Because that's the way the mindset is of government now. She makes a great point. What can I do about it? Well, the first thing we can do is pass my budget this year. That's a step in the right direction. And from there, we'll keep working on it, because she is absolutely right. Nothing bothers me more than to watch people get driven out of their own homes, things that they've worked for their whole life, and maybe they're elderly now and they're on fixed income. And the continual rise of property taxes, and I'll tell you what else it should do out there. It should set a bell off for all of you people out there to pay attention to your local elections. Because far too often, we always say we want local control, and then when you get local control, one of the units that's very much responsible for property taxes is your local unit of government. Hold them accountable. Hold the people you elect at the local level accountable.
Proposed constitutional amendment would get rid of the property tax altogether. Do you support that idea?
Again, but you've got to look at the flip side and say, how do you make up those dollars? You're going to have to expand the sales tax then, or you're going to have to expand the income tax, or you're going to have to expand or cut government. And you see what happens when you try to cut government, Gary. Everyone comes over and protests. Let me also make this statement right now about my budget and what people better pay attention to. Government grew almost 13% permanent my first 2 years in office. I will not allow that to happen. They will have to override my vetoes to make government grow at that level again. They just came out last week, and they said late last week, and said the average American citizen now works till May 3rd for the government. You don't start working for yourself until May the 4th. So we all right now, from January 1st to present day today, haven't even been working for ourselves. We're still working to pay our taxes. And I think that's ridiculous. When you over a third, it's now over a third of your year goes to pay for government.
What about the, your proposal to expand the sales tax to make up for the property tax cuts and income tax cuts seems to be in some serious trouble, at least in the Minnesota House. What about this counter-proposal that Senator Belanger's come up with, which would extend the sales tax to clothing?
Well, it's the great thing about me is, Gary, there's no sacred cows. I'll look at everything. And Senator Belanger came up with a proposal that if people want to accept and pay it on clothing rather than on services, it's a temporary fix, is what it is. Eventually, you're going to have to get to services because our entire economy is changing. If the sales tax is going to be a viable tax, which I hope it is, and if you want it to be stable and steady, you've got to include services, because services go on continuously, where if the sales tax is only on goods, right now, only our economy in the 1960s, when we set up our sales tax, we were 60% goods, 40% services. Today, that's flip-flopped. We're now 60% services, 40% goods. So we're a much more service-based economy. And if you want to use a sales tax as a viable tax form and a way that you can count on for a continued steady revenue, then you need to include services in it. Sure, it's a gutsy proposal. Sure, I took a lot of heat over it, but I didn't get elected to be not have courage. And no one will ever accuse me of not having courage, Gary. I have courage.
Carol, your question for the governor?
Yes. Hello, Mr. Ventura.
Yes.
My question is, there's been a lot of stuff in the news about not enough money going to the U and the medical school. And there's been a proposal brought in the House that they should divert funds from the tobacco prevention endowment into the medical school. I personally believe this is a bad idea because tobacco is such a big issue in the state. My question is, what's the possibility of raising the tobacco tax as an alternative revenue source? You just said you don't want to reward bad behavior and that sales tax is a good tax because the people choose. Tobacco smokers cost this state so much money every year, so it seems pretty fair to me. So what's your opinion on that?
Well, that's true, but let's remember they're also addicts. Because tobacco is addiction, nicotine is addiction, so many of them in ways can't help it, and I'm not condoning the behavior. I used to chew Copenhagen a can a day. I was highly addicted to it, and it's one of the most difficult things I ever did in my life was quitting chewing tobacco. It was unbelievably hard. I'm open again to everything. I believe also, as the caller, that I don't believe that we should use the tobacco endowment money, the money that was won in the court case. I think we have good uses for it right now, good uses that will pay off in the long run. She's absolutely right. The use of tobacco costs us a tremendous amount of health care money. And why is health care money so expensive? Because of choices we make in our lives. Of not being healthy, not eating right, not exercising, using tobacco, using things of that nature, and then healthcare costs go through the ceiling, and everyone screams and hollers and wonders why and want the government to fix it. Well, the majority of your healthcare costs today, you can fix yourself by the choices you make in your own personal life. And if everybody will look in the mirror and make those good choices, the cost of health care will drop tremendously. No, I don't support using the tobacco endowments for anything other than they're being used for right now.
Is that veto bait if it comes to you?
Anything's veto bait. I'm the most veto overridden governor in state history, and I kind of like setting a Henry Aaron mark. You know, if you're going to go after the record, let's put one out there that can't be broken.
So that would be something you would get the veto pen out for?
I won't put myself into a corner and say yes or no on anything like that until it arrives at my desk. But I will tell you this, there is nothing that is really free from my veto pen.
Mm-hmm.
I will judge them all individually and how they come to my desk.
Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura is our guest this hour. If you'd like to call in with a question for the governor, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll get to more of your questions in a couple of minutes.
Programming on Minnesota Public Radio is supported by the Minnesota-based James Sewell Ballet, performing April 20th through 29th at St. Paul's O'Shaughnessy Auditorium.
Understanding numbers used to be so simple.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, that's the song of the count.
Now the numbers we follow are not on Sesame Street. They're on Wall Street, and they're not always as easy to grasp. But we can help. I'm David Brancaccio, for the numbers you care about and the stories behind them. Join me weekdays on Marketplace from PRI.
Marketplace is on the air each weekday here at 6:30 here on Minnesota Public Radio. Of course, you're listening to member-supported Minnesota Public Radio, and our thanks to our loyal and generous members. Time now for some news headlines. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Thanks, Gary. Good morning. The latest numbers show inflation appears to be in check. Consumer prices edged up 0.1% last month, the smallest increase in 7 months. Analysts credit falling energy prices, including those for gasoline and natural gas. A White House spokesman says President Bush wants some tough questions to be asked tomorrow about how the Chinese intercept surveillance flights. He says Bush has given those instructions to the Americans who will be meeting with Chinese officials in the aftermath of the emergency landing of a U.S. spy plane on Chinese island. A military-led American delegation has arrived in Beijing for the negotiations. The State Department spokesman says the U.S. will seek the prompt return of a detained Navy spy plane and discuss what caused the plane's April 1st collision with a Chinese fighter jet and how to avoid such incidents in the future. Chinese officials don't want the U.S. to resume spy plane flights near the Chinese coast, but the Bush administration has promised to restart the flights. Voter turnout is now said to be mixed in Mississippi, where residents are deciding whether to keep the state's 1894 flag. It features a controversial Confederate emblem. Some areas are reporting heavy turnout, while others are seeing a moderate to light turnout. In regional news, flood fighters are focusing on eastern Minnesota as the threat of flooding eases in western and central parts of the state. Officials estimate the flood battle has cost the state at least $2 million so far, and local governments at least $8 million. Cities from Hastings to Winona along the Minnesota-Wisconsin border are preparing for near-record crests of the Mississippi and St. Croix Rivers over the next few days. The Minnesota River is also scheduled to crest sometime this week. The forecast for Minnesota calls for mostly sunny skies statewide today, with high temperatures mainly in the 40s. We'll have clear skies tonight, with lows dipping down into the 20s. Checking current conditions around the region, mostly fair skies reported at this hour. Rochester reports fair skies in 39. Skies are fair in St. Cloud in 38, fair skies in Duluth and 33, and in the Twin Cities, fair skies with a temperature of 40 degrees. Gary, that's a look at the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. 26 minutes before noon, midday coming to you on Minnesota Public Radio, and our guest this hour, Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. Lots of callers on the line. Bill, you're next. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I just wanted to challenge the whole premise behind Tax Freedom Day and the notion that that there's something horrid about the fact that we're working for the government until May 3rd. That I know that people can disagree about priorities and what money should be spent on, but in fact that money is going to provide public safety, education, all the things that we as a community, as a state, work towards together to achieve. And to say that somehow, to say it in a way that is so disparaging that makes it sound like it's going to line the pockets of a king or to go to line the pockets of legislators, I think is both a disservice to the people who are trying to do good in government, and it's also a destructive way of thinking about how we really, there are things that we do better working together, while there are other things where we make better decisions.
And I agree wholeheartedly. I didn't say that. I have not said one word like that, but what I'm saying is, why does the date keep moving more towards 50 halfway through the year? That's my concern. I'm not saying that what government does is wrong. I never once said that's lining anybody's pockets. My problem with it is we are allowing government to grow at such a level that at what point does it stop? Like 20 years from now, will it be July 15th? Will that be, and the last caller, will he be happy with that? Will he be happy when over half the money he earns? That's called socialism. And that's a move towards socialism, to where government is the most important thing and not us as individuals. And I think that's very dangerous. Why should it continue? You know, inflation goes up at a certain point, but that doesn't mean that that day has to continue to keep moving farther and farther into the year. Why can't it stabilize at one point? Why can't it just stay at one certain point, like May 1st, and end right there? But that's not the case. It continues to go more and more and more. And why? Because government continues to grow faster than the personal economy does and faster than your own family's income. And that's great. If the last caller, you know, if you believe in socialism, then that's terrific. Then you believe that government's here to take care of us all and that we should all just simply work to have the government solve and take care of our problems, which he and I can differ on because I philosophically don't believe in that. I believe in, that you take care of yourself and that government should only do for you what you can't do for yourself.
Big budget debate, of course, over K-12 funding. Based on what the House and the Senate are talking about, both bodies have recommended spending more money than you've proposed. What do you want to see in any kind of education bill to address your complaint that there's no way to know whether this money is being well spent?
I want to see reform.
What does that mean?
Well, reform can mean teacher licensing, contract negotiation reform, accountability, knowing where the money... did you just hear the latest thing from Washington? Washington said they put I don't know how many billions of dollars and one of their people came out and said we have no idea if we got anything for it or not. They have into education, no way of knowing. Our test scores aren't showing it. Look at the situation right now that came out a month ago, Gary, where they said 33% of the children coming out of high school going into college are taking remedial courses that they should have already passed and succeeded at in high school. And they're taking them now in college. Something's broken out there. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of what is broken. And solving the problem doesn't mean necessarily pouring more money into it. Pouring more money into it doesn't necessarily mean you get a better education. If you look at certain school districts that get the most of the money, they're not turning out the results that other school districts that get less money turn out. So but what I'm looking for very strongly is reform. I want to see how change the way we license teachers, change the way we pay them, and get reform into the system and start fixing the system, because if we don't fix the system, guaranteed, okay, the legislature will probably put more money in than I did. But it's not going to change anything because 2 years from now, they're going to be asking for more money, 4 years from now, more money, 6 years from now, more money, 10 years from now, more money. And what's interesting to note is that in the last decade alone, K-12 spending has gone up 100%, and yet there's not that many more students. The number of students of 10 years ago to today is very insignificant. It's almost the same, just slightly higher, and yet the spending's gone up 100%.
Overall, do you think the schools are in Minnesota are doing a good job for most of the kids, recognizing some schools fall down, kids fall mm-hmm. through the crack, but for most kids, do you think the schools are doing a good job?
I think that they do. They're in a general statement, yes, but I think there's far too much bureaucracy out there, and there's far too much something's missing. Because the road we're traveling down now, and remember this, let's also remember and get back to brass tacks of government here for a moment. Take a look at how our money works. Okay, state money goes in and pays the teachers, right? The teachers then have to pay a certain amount of their salary to Education Minnesota, which is their big union, right? Then the union uses that state money tax money to then come back to the state to get more money. And then they also filter that money into campaign contributions very strongly into the Democratic Party, because that's one of the biggest contributors. And Education Minnesota is the most powerful and biggest lobbyist over at the Capitol. And statistics show they spend the most money. And what are they spending? It's the vicious circle. They get their money from tax dollars, and then they turn around and spend that money to get more tax dollars.
Email question on kind of a related subject. Emailer says, one question I'd like to ask the governor is how much a teacher should get paid. He's blaming the school funding shortfall on teachers' contracts, so I want to know what is a fair settlement.
They should tell me that. No one's been able to come and tell me how much education needs to survive.
Well, the teachers' union says $300 million in additional spending per year would be about right.
Every year.
Well, at least for the next 2 years.
Just every budget. Every budget, they need an additional $300 million, even though there's not any more kids. And $300 million, huh? I don't know what a teacher should get paid. But, see, people understand that when they go into teaching, I think. I don't think anyone goes into the teaching profession thinking, you know, I'm going to become a multimillionaire from teaching. Just as no one goes into the law enforcement profession. If you decide that you want to be a police officer, you know you're not going to get rich. You know you're not going to end up being a multimillionaire living in Malibu, California, off being a police officer. And the same holds true for teaching. Should teachers get paid more? Probably. That's the way our society works. Should sports athletes get what they paid? Get what they get? Probably not. But in a capitalist market-driven economy, there's unfairness to it, and that's what we accept in it. But let's also remember too. You know, I also remember a letter from an award-winning teacher who criticized me dramatically because she said, "Do you want teachers having to hold down second jobs?" Well, most teachers do, because they get quite a long summer vacation, and most of them all. During the summer, they either take a vacation or, if they so choose, or they get a second employment during that summer to earn additional money. And that's just whatever your lifestyle is and how you want to live and how much you want to work.
Dean, your question for the governor?
Hi, Gary. Hi, Governor. How are you?
Yes, Dean.
A couple of comments quickly, and then I'll get to my question. I'd like to thank the governor for his turnaround on the NPR funding. I know when he first came into office, he wanted to not contribute as much to the NPR funding, but I think that he's found that it's as valuable a format as a lot of us appreciate.
Well, let me add something before you go on. I find that NPR doesn't carry an agenda. They seem to report the news as news and don't try to create the news. And I've really found that refreshing, which our other news media does not seem to do that. And so that's the reason I feel that NPR is now a necessity out there if you want to get clear, unopinionated news more so.
Well, that's a big mea culpa on your part, Governor, and that shows that you're flexible on some issues as well.
One other comment
I had about property taxes was an idea that I thought you could refer to as the pay and stay, that if you paid your mortgage over your term and you wanted to stay in your home, it's likely that you would be elderly or in a position where your finances would be, you know, more of a concern. And that if you had paid your taxes over the term of your mortgage, that they would perhaps reduce your property tax bill to the limited amount of services that would be needed to service the property, but perhaps take the land and the building off of the tax roll. So that might be a way to significantly reduce tax bills for people that allows them to stay in their homes after paid them off.
That's an interesting idea.
And the last thing that I had to talk to you about, Governor, quickly was driver behavior in the metro area.
Uh-oh.
I know you're big
I don't
on
know what I could do about that.
But I know you're big on personal responsibility, but I also just heard you say earlier in the hour that you're big on public safety. It's out of control, and something needs to be done. I spend a lot of time in the car during the day, and I seem like I take my life in my hands every time I'm out there.
Yep.
I come home with three or four stories after being out for a couple hours that just leave me shuddering. What's your take on that?
Well, again, I wish that I could do something about it, but I can't go out and drive for everybody, and I agree with you. People need to relax a little bit. That's the best advice I can give. People need to be courteous, because people need to remember something. Driving is not a right, it's a privilege. We've kind of lost track of that, that you have, you're granted a privilege to drive and that you get the privilege of having a driver's license. People seem to think they have the right to drive and it's their right to do this and that, and it really is not. And if you break the rules out there, that privilege can be taken away from you. And if you jeopardize other people's safety with your driving habits, then you shouldn't be out there driving on the road. And we also need to give alternative transportation. I mean, look how hard I've had to fight to get light rail. We in Minnesota, there is no alternative mass transit here. And we need to give people choices so that they don't always have to get in their car to go somewhere, so that they can, if you live somewhere, you can drive to somewhere, get on a mass transportation system and go downtown, or other ways of doing things. But I guess the only advice, and the caller makes a great point, the only advice I can give to people is be courteous. You know, get out there and don't get so upset. Don't get this road rage that goes on. And, you know, let people blend in. Keep your car lengths. There's no excuse for tailgating. You know, there's no excuse for driving in that manner. And you know, I can sit and lecture about it, but ultimately you as a driver have to accept the responsibility of how you personally drive every day. And were you courteous or were you not when you're on the road? And believe me, that courtesy works a lot better than aggressiveness out there.
In terms of traffic congestion, the Transportation Department's poll that was released here a few days ago seemed to indicate people are really concerned about it. Are you concerned enough about it to think about supporting a gas tax increase, as the Senate Democrats are talking about?
Well, last year I submitted a whole transportation package that would have funded transportation and highway construction and everything else for the next 10 years, but the legislature chose not to even look at it. So I kind of just moved on with this year's budget. I thought, oh, well, they didn't do anything with the, and mine's still there, you know, but they chose not to do a thing with it. I've even been told by a few of them off the record that they made a big mistake last year. Well, so be it. Live with your mistake then. But I just moved on then. I thought, well, they're not interested in it, so, you know, I'll move on to other things.
So you'd be open to a gas tax increase?
No, I'm not going to. You're not going to catch me on that one. That's a call they're going to make. If the legislature's going to raise taxes, they're going to do it, not me.
But you would not necessarily veto that.
Anything is up for a veto, Gary. I told you that earlier in the show.
Not a line in the sand, though.
And then they can always override my veto. That's how the system works. I can veto something, and if two-thirds of them disagree with me, the system allows them to override my veto.
Sarah, your question, please.
Hello, Governor. Thanks for your time. I heard your last interview on this program and heard your thoughts about Minnesota public educators and their qualifications and licensing and all those sorts of things, but I've never heard your thoughts on homeschooling, and I'm anxious to hear a few words from you about on this sort of topic.
Well, I'll tell you, right now in Minnesota, we are the highest homeschooled population in the nation per capita. There are more people in Minnesota homeschooling today, and you have to kind of look at that and say, why is that happening? Is it lack of confidence in our public education system, or is it just the feeling that parents feel that they can, you know, do it better? I have no problem with homeschooling as long as the kids get the education that they need to have to succeed in life. That I'm a great believer that the main ingredient in education, without a doubt, is parents. In fact, I got into a big disagreement with the two heads of Education Minnesota, their two union leaders, when I said that to them. I said, to me, the most important ingredient in a child's education is the parent, and they told me they disagreed. And I looked at them in amazement, because remember something, you only have a teacher for 1 year. You have your parents your whole life. And so if people choose to homeschool, I have no problem with that whatsoever, as long as they do the job. And only they know if they're doing the job. But it is their children, so they certainly have a reason to do the job, right? What bigger reason could you have than to? But then, of course, that's not available for all parents, because many parents have to work, they have to support the family, and they don't have the time to put into homeschooling. But if you certainly have the time and are financially in a position to be able to do it, you won't get any complaint out of me at all. That's up to an individual's decision. It's up to a parental decision. And who knows what's best for their children than the parents, or at least that's the way it should be.
Don't have a lot of time left, but I needed to ask you. There has been, of course, quite a controversy over your comments regarding hunting, comparing hunting and war, military service. Are you surprised at the reaction to that?
No, because that's what the media makes a living at.
Well, now, Governor.
My problem was with Anderson, the columnist. It was not with hunters at all. And I'm still entitled to my opinion. My opinion means no more or no less than anyone else's. We all have opinion. We all have First Amendment freedom of speech. And my position, I'm not anti-hunter. If you go out and hunt, hunt to your heart's content. Have I taken away anything from hunting and fishing? No. All I gave was an opinion that I personally can't do it. And I gave an opinion that, in my opinion, until you've been hunted, you haven't really hunted. Well, you can laugh at that opinion. You can say, hey, Jesse Ventura's out of line. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and you're entitled to do that. That was just the media. I met with Anderson because I have a problem with him, and he tries to discredit Al Garber, my commissioner of DNR. He tries to say since Commissioner Garber isn't an active hunter, that he's not that he doesn't know about it and therefore shouldn't be the head and all this stuff, and he says derogatory things about him all the time, and I take offense to that, and I'm going to protect the people. And I was using actually Commissioner Garber more as the example. Here's a man who's an Army Ranger with 2 tours in Vietnam, 26 years in the field as an active FBI agent. You're telling me he's not a qualified hunter? Just depends on what he's hunting. But he knows how to hunt. Mm-hmm. How do you be an FBI agent in the field for 25 years and not know how to hunt? You know? And it isn't all urban hunting. It's rural hunting, too. He also led the Wetterling investigation. You know, and I just took exception. And what happened there was they flipped a tape recorder on, and they took a private meeting of a conversation and turned it into a news story, and which is fine. I'm not going to back down from it, but I hold nothing. I have no fight with hunters or fishermen. Look at my record. I haven't done a thing. People want to hunt, hunt to your heart's content. But just because I have a different opinion of it doesn't make me. You can say my opinion's baloney. But I'm still entitled to have one.
Timberwolves. You big Timberwolves fan. Are they going to get past the first round of the playoffs this year?
Well, they got the best team with the best record, the San Antonio Spurs. But I'll tell you, from what I've learned in many years watching NBA basketball, it's all about matchups. Different teams match up again, and we match up pretty good with San Antonio. I'll put it this way. I'd rather face San Antonio than the Los Angeles Lakers any day. Because you figure Duncan and Garnett are going to equal each other. They're both great players. They're a wash pretty well. Well, we've got enough big guys. David Robinson's not the David Robinson of 5 years ago. He's not the dominating David Robinson he used to be. So it's going to come down to the other matchups, and I just think we match up pretty well. I think that Terrell Brandon, I think, is a little better than Vinnie Johnson is at point guard. And so, I would rather see San Antonio than I would the L.A. Lakers.
Get a job as a commentator on the NBA games after the XFL gig is done this weekend.
Well, no, but I did actually do a Timberwolf game a few years ago. They needed a commentator before I was jumping between being mayor and governor, and I sat down and did an NBA game and had a great time doing it. It's a lot of fun, but personally, I'd rather do it as a fan. I'd rather be there as a fan, because if you're commentating the game, you're working, you know, and you can't yell and holler and enjoy it as a fan as much, because you're busy talking and having to analyze the game a little bit more.
Governor, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Gary. Always a pleasure.
Our guest this hour, Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. Thanks to all of you who've been with us this hour, especially those of you who called in or tried to call in with your questions and comments. 5 minutes before 12.
Is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, it's the 17th of April, 2001. It's the birthday of the scientist George Kohler, born in Munich, Germany, 1946, who was the co-inventor of one of the most important techniques of modern biochemistry, a method of forcing immune system cells to make pure antibodies against a chosen antigen. The cells are called monoclonal antibodies, and they can be used to diagnose disease organisms and also to target specific body tissues with therapeutic agents. It's the birthday of playwright and novelist Thornton Wilder, born in Madison, Wisconsin, 1897. His father was a newspaper editor and diplomat. His family spent time in Hong Kong and Shanghai. Thornton Wilder taught school for a living until the success of his play, Our Town, in 1937, made it possible for him to live from his writing alone. He won the Pulitzer Prize for both literature and drama. The play Our Town, the play The Skin of Our Teeth, and his novel The Bridge Over San Luis Rey. And it's the birthday of Karin Dinesen, better known as Isak Dinesen, born in Rungsted, Denmark, 1885. She married her cousin, Baron Brøer Blixen Finneke, the twin brother of the man she really loved when she was 29, went with him to Africa. They owned a coffee plantation in Kenya. Divorced 7 years later, she managed the plantation alone for 10 years. She wrote her first book in English, Seven Gothic Tales, 1934, and after that, Out of Africa. Later, she wrote her books in Danish and translated them herself to English. Her other collections included Winter Tales and Last Tales. Here's a poem for today by Raymond Carver, Locking Yourself Out, Then Trying to Get Back In. You simply go out and shut the door without thinking. And when you look back at what you've done, it's too late. If this sounds like the story of a life, okay. It was raining. The neighbors who had a key were away. I tried and tried the lower windows, stared inside at the sofa, plants, the table and chairs, the stereo setup. My coffee cup and ashtray waited for me on the glass top table, and my heart went out to them. I said, hello, friends, or something like that. After all, this wasn't so bad. Worse things had happened. This was even a little funny. I found the ladder, took that, and leaned it against the house, then climbed in the rain to the deck, swung myself over the railing, and tried the door, which was locked, of course. But I looked in just the same, at my desk, some papers, and my chair. There was the window on the other side of the desk where I'd raise my eyes and stare out when I sat at that desk. This is not like downstairs, I thought. This is something else. And it was something to look in like that, unseen from the deck, to be there, inside, and not be there. I don't even think I can talk about it. I brought my face close to the glass and imagined myself inside, sitting at the desk, looking up from my work now and again, thinking about some other place and some other time, the people I had loved then. I stood there for a minute in the rain, considering myself to be the luckiest of men. Even though a wave of grief passed through me, even though I felt violently ashamed of the injury I'd done back then, I bashed that beautiful window and stepped back in. A poem by Raymond Carver, Locking Yourself Out, Then Trying to Get Back In. From the collection Where Water Comes Together with Other Water, published by Vintage Books, a division of Random House. Used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Brought to you by the people at 21NorthMain.com, where book lovers find 13 million gently read classics, bestsellers, and rare masterpieces on the web at 21NorthMain.com. Technical direction by Mitch Hanley. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.